Well, good morning. I'm Representative Dave Pinto. I'm the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, and I'm calling this meeting of the committee to order. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual meetings of this type. I want to direct the attention of members of the public to our committee website, where you'll find our agenda and meeting materials and all kinds of good stuff there. So please check that out. We'll start, as usual, having Mr. Doeslin take the role. So Mr. Doeslin, please do that.
Good morning, everyone. Representative Pinto, chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Present.
Lead Franzen.
Present.
Representative Bennett is excused. Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels is excused. Representative Daphne.
Daphne, present.
Representative Dameth.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, present.
Representative Cotiza-Watum. Representative Cotiza-Watum. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz, present.
And Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
We have a quorum. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Doeslin. Thank you all. We have some minutes from March 17th. And Representative Pryor, if you could please move approval of those.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. So members, any additions or corrections to the minutes from March 17th? So hearing none, all in favor of approval of those minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion passes. We have our minutes approved. So members, we have a presentation from DHS regarding a regulation modernization effort that we mandated and funded last spring. And then we'll hear a couple bills that also relate to regulation of early care and learning, and then have a third bill as well, fourth piece of the agenda towards the end. So a number of things going on. I should note that I have a bill up in another committee in a few minutes that will just take me out for only a few minutes. So Representative Pryor will step in for that. But we'll start off by having this presentation that I mentioned. And so I believe that we have Mr. Hosh from DHS, but then also a couple of guests from the National Association for Regulatory Administration. So, Mr. Rosh, we'll have you start us out. I think that you're first up, and please identify yourself and proceed, and we'll go from there.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you very much for your time. My name is Larry Hosh. I'm the manager of the Policy, Legislation, Stakeholder Engagement Team at the Licensing Division. I'm happy to report on the regulation modernization projects. This is a product that came out of some task force recommendations, and we previously presented a little bit about the regulation modernization project earlier this session. But we do have a few updates that I just wanted to provide before we hand it over to the representatives from NARA. We have executed our contract, so we are in the very beginning stage of kicking this project off the ground. In addition to the appropriation that was provided for the contracting with NARA, we also hired three policy analysts that will be supporting this project from inception through execution. And those three policy analysts have been hired, and we are onboarding them right now. We're extremely excited about this project. We think it will really establish the future for how we regulate family child care and child care centers. There's three primary components with this project for each license type. One is establishing new licensing standards, modernizing our standards that are over almost 40 years old right now, implementing a risk-based violation system. So we're really focusing on those violations that are most imminent to health and safety for children. And then also establishing abbreviated inspections, which would be informed by key indicators. So with those updates, I know we presented previously from the DHS side. So we have Jim Murphy, who's the executive director of the National Association of Regulatory Administration, and also Ron Volusky here. So I would like to hand it off to them. They can present from the NARA perspective and answer any detailed questions the committee might have.
Thank you so much. Mr. Rush, just to confirm, so NARA has been contracted with DHS to do some of this work. Can you just describe, or perhaps your guests will be, so we can turn to them if that's best, but just to describe kind of what the relationship is or the role that they're playing in the work.
NARA will best, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. NARA will best be able to describe that, but they're really providing the professional and technical expertise They have a history of working with other states of implementing previous initiatives, and they really provide that professional background and expertise that will help inform us as we engage stakeholders, as we develop pilot projects. I should mention as well that we do have a proposal this year to authorize pilot projects for this project, which is integral into really carrying through this project and having a successful project. But I'll hand it off to Nara from here on out.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and we should make sure to highlight that proposal. So I think we have Jim Murphy up next, and if you can please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members. Thank you, Mr. Hosh, as well. I'm Jim Murphy. I'm the executive director of NARA. NARA stands for the National Association for Regulatory Administration. As Mr. Hosh has mentioned, we also have Ron Maleski joining us today as well. He's a data scientist and will be working intimately on this process and project. NARA is a little bit of history. Some of you may be aware from previous discussions, but is a nonprofit organization. We were started back in 1976, really as a grassroots organization by regulators and licensing professionals for regulators and licensing professionals. And since then, the organization and the services have continued to grow. One of our predominant services is the consultative type of service that we're providing here to the state of Minnesota. And as Mr. Hosh had mentioned, it really does combine those three different components that he mentioned. And so what we look to do is we look to go in and partner with the state employees, the state team, and work together to really do a deep dive into the data analysis on the key indicator and the weighted risk analysis piece to help identify those systems that are going to help make the process more efficient. And then on the standard side, we look to, again, work with all relative stakeholders in the process to make sure that feedback is integrated and considered into the process in proposing updated rules, updated standards and state statutes for the state to consider implementation of in order to really implement best practices, things of that nature. So we're excited. I know that we started working with a small piece of the project a couple of years back with Mr. Hosh and his team. And we're excited to continue that work and expand it with both not only the child care centers, but the family child care programs throughout the state as well. with that, we have pulled together a team of 11 folks. Mr. Maleski, who's on the meeting, is one of those folks, but the team is going to be broken down into a couple of different sub-teams. So we will have dedicated folks who are working on the standards and the statutes part, and then we'll have smaller teams broken out working on the different aspects of both the key indicators and the weighted risk analysis work as well. NARA has a very long and rich history of doing this kind of work throughout numerous states. I want to say it's about 18 to 20 states at varying levels throughout the United States, and I think we're up to five or six provinces up in Canada as well that we've been doing this work. And the end result is extremely positive in terms of not only assisting with the review process and the inspections, but in terms of the workload and the direction for the regulators and licensing professionals as well. So with that, we certainly want to give an opportunity, and we're welcome to any questions that any of you may have. Again, Mr. Maleski is on the phone, is a much more technical person than I am for some of those questions as they come up as well.
All right, thank you, Mr. Murphy, for the presentation. And committee members may note that I'm the one that just came on right now, which means that Chair Pinto has moved to another committee to do a bill presentation. But we will carry on. And so at this point, as Mr. Murphy just indicated, we are open for questions. So member questions at this point. And I can start us off with maybe just again, just kind of make sure that we're grounded in where we are in this process. Mr. Hosher, Mr. Murphy, could you remind us again of the timelines and kind of where we stand? And I think you've done it. It sounds like, you know, this is where we have the foundation now, the people in place for doing the work. But again, you know, what milestones that we can look for as this project continues on.
Certainly. So I will mention that tomorrow we have our kickoff introductory meeting for the key individuals on both the Minnesota State side as well as the NARA side. So we'll be meeting to discuss many of the things that you just mentioned. The key indicator and weighted risk analysis piece, I think, is upwards of about a 36-month, so three-year project from start to finish. The standards and the statutes piece is, I want to say, a little bit shorter, about 27 months, I believe, is the timeline that we're looking at there. So some of our consultants and folks on the team on the NARA side have already started looking at the standards and the statutes that are available online on the Minnesota state site. So that work has already started through the research process and familiarization with the actual standards.
Mr. Hosher, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. In addition to what Mr. Murphy stated, we will also be having a report and recommendations back to the legislature. And ultimately, we would hope that we would have support and a favorable reaction from the legislature, and then work on the implementation stage, which would likely occur in 2025 after the project is done. Just to also put things into perspective, for the revised licensing standards, we anticipate up to three different revisions for revised standards. That initiative will also be put into a pilot project. And then the risk-based violation system, as we move forward with stakeholder engagement and different iterations of a risk-based violation system, that would also be employed in the field with the pilot project as well. And then from what we learned from that process, we would make the recommendations to the legislature.
All right, thank you, Mr. Hosh. And I see that Representative Wasilek has a question. Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions here. My first question is sort of, maybe Mr. Hosh can provide this, but what sort of changes have been made? I know when I was on the Family Child Care Task Force, we sort of talked a little bit about regulation updates, and it's been sort of piecemeal, bit by bit, here and there, sort of as we've gone along. Can you talk a little bit about like the scope of that? Like, what sort of things have we already updated, and why the need for this broader sort of revamp of regulation? So that's my first question. If you could take that one first,
okay, Mr. Hosh.
Thank you, Representative and Madam Chair, members of the committee. I will do my best to try to answer that question. I just recently onboarded in this role, so the recommendations of the Family Child Care Task Force preceded my time at the department. But most of the recommendations that we've done on the regulatory structure has really been around the edges. We've done something such as the Family Child Care Training Advisory Committee, which is underway right now. We also have a safe sleep proposal that is in front of the legislature this year. But any substantive transformative changes is really baked into this project with the regulation modernization. Because of the impact and how many people this project and what we're proposing affects, we really need to have extensive stakeholder feedback and really need to make sure that we're engaging all stakeholders from providers to licensors to community members and making sure that we're wide-eyed with the changes that we're recommending. This is a result of the work that's been done previously, but really the larger transformative changes are in this project and haven't occurred up to this date.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you actually answered my second question with your response, so I don't have a second question there. So thank you for the response.
All right. And, thank you, Chair Pinto. We are on to member questions. And Representative Wasilek, we had just completed her question. And other member question.
I actually have a question, Madam Chair. I'm still unfortunately waiting to be called into my other committee, but I did have, or maybe just a point that I think that DHS has a kind of an overview of the project that I don't think that we got to get posted. And so I guess I would ask Mr. Hosh and the DHS staff if you could please make sure that we have some of the materials, because when I'm looking on our committee website, I'm realizing I don't know that we have received those things. That kind of describes, gives us a sense of how this process is going on. So if you could make sure to give that we can get out to committee members and the public, that'd be really helpful. Yes.
Mr. Chair, it appears that it was just posted and that if you refresh, and then members of the public will be able to see it too.
Oh, good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me think, and I perhaps I missed this, but because again, I had to pop out for a minute. Can you just talk about the sort of public consultation and input that's being that's happening during this process? I'm not sure if that's directed to Mr. Hosh or to Nera, but just understand kind of how it is that you're taking in the information to be able to figure out the best process for regulations and kind of, I would think there'd be both input at the beginning of the process and then of course, as you're drafting, to get input and kind of what that process is to make sure that it's the very best, the system that we end up with is the very best possible. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, okay, I'll continue to be chair. Thank you, Chair Pinto. And I think Mr. Hosh, would you like to start that? And then we can have other testifiers also engage on this question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Pinto. I will open this up and then hand it off to NARA. Because NARA has done this through multiple states, they have more experience on the exact, the details for stakeholder engagement. But with that said, we are dedicating significant resources within the department to support NARA, and in particular stakeholder engagement, because without successful stakeholder engagement, this project won't be successful. So we will be dedicating a lot of time and effort to ensure that what we hear in the field and what we hear from stakeholders is understood and properly reflected in our recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Hosh. And then I think Mr. Murphy, can you expand on that?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. Thank you, Mr. Hosh, for your introduction of that. What we do is we work with the team on the Minnesota state side in terms of identifying the applicable stakeholders, folks who should be involved, both internal to the state employment system as well as external, whether it's providers and whatnot. Then what we do is we have a combination of, we'll be doing this both on the key indicator side as well as on the weighted risk analysis side. We do conduct focus groups. So we reach out to the identified stakeholders for the focus groups with questionnaires, collect data. We actually analyze that data and formulate reports based on that data and the input that was received. And that is shared throughout the entire team, both on the NARA side as well as the folks from Minnesota. Later in the process, we also hold the stakeholder engagement sessions. That tends to be a little bit more internal with regards to the staff, the regulators, licensing professionals within the state of Minnesota that are on both the child care center and the family child care program side. So we continue to look at data, again, in both sides of the house for this project to make sure that that's used and inputted into the recommendations that are made into the data analysis that's done in the development of the system and identification of the key indicator standards as well as the weighted risk analysis process. On the standard side and the statutes, again, we look to gather information and include all applicable stakeholders in terms of not only the regulators and licensing professionals, but providers themselves, which are key in terms of identifying, potential updates, revisions that we would propose to the standards. In addition to that, we look at a broader data perspective around best practices from other states, research that we've seen, other projects that we've worked on as well, so that we have a broad scope to be bringing in recommendations of, how to potentially improve the standards and the state statutes. And I don't know, Mr. Molesky, if you have anything to add to that from your experience in working on these projects as well.
I do.
And thank you, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Maloski, and could you please identify yourself for the record, as this is the first time you're testifying?
Of course. My name is Ronald Maloski. I'm with the National Association for Regulatory Administration and perform data analytics and data scientist activities. I would just like to give a more good morning, Madam Chair, Chair Pinto, members of the committee. I would just like to give a concrete example of how we might use stakeholder input in, say, the development of the weighted standards. Well, as all of you know, there's a series of rules related to the provision of childcare services. And those rules can range from things that people may see as relatively low risk, such as a form or a document may not be signed, all the way up to very high risk, which is a crib may be in disrepair and cause an immediate threat to the health and safety of an infant. Now, we can all agree that while all regulations are important, certainly the latter poses a greater risk of harm. What we want to ensure in the sense of stakeholder buy-in is making sure that we all have the same idea, the same expectation of what constitutes the greatest risk of harm. We as regulators may say, oh, it is definitely this subset of regulation, is this regulation is most dangerous. Whereas, say, a member of the child care provider community may say, no, no, it is this regulation that is most dangerous. Still others, parents perhaps, may have another idea about what is most dangerous. That is why we want to gather data from all stakeholder sources, tabulate it, analyze it, and find which out of all the rules have the heaviest weight, in a sense, meaning pose the highest risk to children. What our research has found is, believe it or not, most of these stakeholder group responses are pretty consistent. So while regulators, providers, the general public may not always see eye to eye, when it comes to which regulations are most dangerous, we tend to be on the same page. But we want to capture the data from those sources to be able to say, not only is this what we think, but this is what we know by and through our analysis.
Thank you, Ms. Maloski. I see that Representative Damoth, you have a question.
Thank you, Vice Chair Pryor. And to the testifiers so far this morning, I appreciate the information that's been shared. This definitely was part of a conversation in the Family Child Care Task Force. So watching this move forward is encouraging. Mr. Hosh, specifically a question for you, and it is good to see you again, sir. You had mentioned that there's going to be a report due to the legislature, and then that implementation is due 2025. Maybe this is already included in the report that was added to our committee website, and I haven't had a chance to look at that. But if you could just touch on when that report is due to the legislature so we can think a little bit more timeline, and then I can check it. So either way, thank you.
Mr. Hosh, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Damoth. Also great to see you today, too. If my recollection is correct, I believe the report is 2024, with the caveat that I have a lot of dates in my head and a lot of different reports we have to come back to the legislature. So if that is misstated, we'll be sure to follow back up with you with the correct date. But I believe it's the beginning of 2024.
Follow up, Representative Damoth.
No, that's fine. And I look forward to looking at that report also that's included in our packages to get a little bit more idea. But thank you very much for the work. This is much appreciated.
All right. Thank you, Representative Damoth. So I think I'm not seeing any other questions, but I do have maybe one question that I'd still like to have addressed maybe in a general sense. And I think perhaps, Mr. Murphy, this would be to you. So as we understand this, this work has been done in other states. And so there's a lot of data, there's even statutes that kind of reflect what other states have done. So in a sense, we're not reinventing the wheel, as the expression goes. So is there a lot of variety in how states are adapting this kind of risk-based modeling? Or is it really more of an education of having everybody understand what's going on and what the basis of this is? And Mr. Murphy, I think if you would address that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members. So it really is a combination of both. We do see some standardization in terms of the work that's being done across the board. So we have a pretty standard process that we go through. That's outlined in the handout, I believe, that you was part of the packet that went out for this meeting as well as previous. And the communications back and forth between Mr. Hosh and ourselves. But we do see some variation in terms of how and to what depth individual states or provinces use this information. And oftentimes that when it gets to the legislative level, the decisions that are made for implementation of that may vary from one to the next. Generally speaking, we do see the greatest positive impact and result based on the full implementation and adoption of the recommendations and the process that are developed. And keeping in mind that this process is a joint process, and as Mr. Hosh mentioned, in the hiring of three additional folks to their team, as well as the existing members of the team that we'll be working with, combined, we're coming up with the recommendations to make sure that they are not only consistent with our past work, our best practices work, and what we've seen in the field across numerous states and provinces, but what is going to work best specifically within the systems in Minnesota. So there's a combination there. It's not a, while there is a lot of overlap and commonality, it's not a one size fits all. It is also customizing it to make sure that it's going to work within, in this situation, both the child care centers and the family child care programs throughout the state of Minnesota.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Murphy. And Mr. Hosh, any final comments that you might have for our committee as you go forward with the work?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just an open invitation to the committee that if there are any questions or if there's any follow-up, that we are happy to respond and answer. We're excited for this project. We think it will be good for providers. We think it will be good for the state of Minnesota. There's a lot of work ahead of us, but we're ready for it, and we're happy to engage the committee at any moment.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, each of you, for being with us this morning. And I think committee members should keep that in mind. If you have any questions and any follow-up, they are open to it. And I think now we will turn to our first bill of the morning. And it is Representative Wolgamont. There you are. Thank you. So Representative Wolgamont, would you like to move House File 3530 to be laid over for possible inclusion in a committee omnibus bill?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right. And I believe also you have an A1 amendment to get in the bill in the form that you prefer.
That is correct, Madam Chair. I would like to move the A1 amendment. It's a pretty simple and straightforward amendment that is just feedback from the department. Just to clarify that there would be at least one staff person who is at least 18 years old with a group of 40 children. So again, just a simple, straightforward amendment from feedback from the department, and I would like to move it before the committee right now.
All right. So Representative Wolgamont has moved the A1 amendment. So members, please unmute yourself to vote on the A1 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted by Representative Wolgamont. And the amendment is adopted. Recommended, Representative Wolgamont, please present your bill as amended.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 3530 as amended. I'm presenting this bill not only as a representative, but also as a parent. I know that myself and many other families have really, especially during the time of the pandemic, have been dependent on having childcare for our children. Without that, I wouldn't be able to do this job, and I know that there are a lot of other families too who depend on having childcare. But unfortunately, there are a lot of families in my community and throughout our state who don't have access to quality, affordable childcare. And that's why I'm presenting this bill, which creates flexibility for the Commissioner of Human Services to increase school-age childcare ratio from 1 to 15 to 1 to 20 students during times of emergency and certified exempt child care facilities. Again, we've seen parents across our state being not having access to a safe place for their child to be during non-school hours, during one of the most significant child care staff crises that we have ever faced. So this bill is an effort to alleviate some of that burden for families, while also keeping in mind that our children need a safe environment to be in. In my district, the Central Minnesota Boys and Girls Club and their Kid Stop programs have provided childcare for myself and for myself and my daughters and many children in our community. But unfortunately, as you'll hear from my testifiers today, there are still kids that don't have that option, that are on waiting lists, that are either, which puts their families in a pinch because they either have to, families are having a barrier to the workplace because they don't have access to the Boys and Girls Clubs, or unfortunately children are just forced to be at home and their safety there is jeopardized being home alone while the parents are at work. So again, what this bill does is increases that child care. We have the amendment that is direct feedback from the department, just to clarify that there has to be at least one staff of 18 years of age for every 40 kids. And it's flexible. We're not saying the department has to do this. It gives the commissioner and it gives the department this option if we get into a public health crisis. So again, Madam Chair and members, I really want to urge your support for this. This will make sure that more children in my community and more families all throughout our state have access to safe, high quality child care options. So that's the bill. That's what it does. That's why I bring it forward. And with your permission, Madam Chair, I have some folks from my community who can shed further light into why we need to pass this bill. Thank you for your consideration, and we look forward to answering any questions you may have.
Thank you, Representative Wolgmont. And I think maybe at this point, the next procedure for the committee is I will officially hand the gavel back to Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Vice Chair Pryor. And so we'll continue on with the first testifier, Ms. Bechtold. If you can please identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you. My name is Jerry Bechtold. I am the VP of Operations for the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota. And I thank you for your time today. I just would like to touch base on what Representative Wolgamont had talked about. We provide the after-school child care in three districts in central Minnesota. So we are in St. Cloud, Sauk Rapids, and Sartell. We have 14 certified Kid Stop locations where we provide the after-school child care. And this fall, we were put into a situation that was brought on by the pandemic of not being able to provide care for all families who needed it due to the staffing crunch that we have been experiencing. And with doing a ratio of 1 to 15, that caused about 450 to 500 youth put on a waiting list while we were looking to hire staff. We still have about 200 kids on the waiting list as we're trying to bring on staff to be able to open that up. So if we could move the ratio from a 1 to 15 to a 1 to 20, that would allow us to bring more families on. So that we could provide care so that parents can go out and find jobs that are get back into the workforce so that we could keep our economy going. So we are really in support of if we could do that just during emergency times, once we get through the emergency, we would go back to a 1 to 15 ratio.
Hey, did you have something further?
Well, would I introduce the next people that we have testifying?
No, I can. Okay. I will. Although you certainly have anything that you want to say about them, please feel free to. I'll do the slight handoff. But was there something in particular, or were you just? I think you were just going to do a handoff. Is that right?
I was just going to do a handoff.
Okay, good. Well, then that's fine. I'll call up Brock Corbell if I can, and if you can identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am with the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Minnesota. I am the senior site manager at one of our Kid Stop locations here. And thank you to the representatives and Mr. Wolgamott. Just to echo some things that were said, we're just really looking to get a lot of these parents back to their normal work hours. A lot of them are still altering their schedules to meet the child care needs that are there for the kids who are not in our program right now. For the community, it's just looking for a safe after school place to go. Our organization and our locations make up a large percentage of the market. And so our parents are really left with very little options when they are put on our wait list and aren't able to get into our program. A lot of them are calling just, where do I go? What do I do? So because of how many students we serve and how many families depend on our organization and our services, they're really at a loss when they're put on our wait list and aren't able to get into our program. So again, a lot of the parents are working different hours right now to try to work a schedule and still do what they can at their jobs to meet the needs of their works and also their kids needing childcare. So getting them in our doors using our services would get parents back to generating a full income for their household, get them working ideal hours at their jobs. And then obviously, as far as the economy goes, they're spending that money in town and they're members and live in our community, and we do make up a large percentage of the market. So a lot of that is a lot of working Central Minnesota families. Parents are really counting on us for a lot of other services that they're missing out on right now. And during the pandemic, we've tried to meet the needs of as many of those services as we can, but now we're down to a lot more families needing childcare aside from our emergency services families. So just really trying to reach as many families as we can. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. And to both of our past two testifiers for your work with the Boys and Girls Club. Really appreciate it. Or clubs, I should say. And then finally, Reva Van Vliet, we have you. And if you could please identify yourself, welcome to you and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. I'm Reva Van Vliet. I am a parent. My son, Odin, has attended the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota's Kid Stop for several years now, since he was in kindergarten. And in this last fall, we were one of those families that were on the waiting list. And it was really difficult for our family to not have that after school care for Odin. We have two younger kiddos who go to daycare, but Odin couldn't go with just being 10 years old and not being the right environment for him. So not having access to Kid Stop last fall was just really tough and really stressful for us, as we did have to patchwork our work schedules. We both work out of the home, having to take off work early, and then stressful on Odin too, not knowing where he was going to go that afternoon, and really missing out on those connections that Kid Stop also provides. So it's more than just childcare; it's you know, social emotional opportunities for him, academic. So it really changed our schedule, but also just kind of our like quality of life that we had experienced when we had Kid Stop. And I know that we aren't alone, and we are in probably a better, you know, position than maybe other families in our community are. We have added support that we could patchwork that, but it was pretty stressful time. So he's back in Kid Stop now, and it's really changed everything. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Van Vliet. Thanks for sharing your experience. We appreciate you being here. I see that Representative Wozniak has her hand up. Representative Wozniak, I'm inclined to have with one more testifier. I think I'm going to go with that, unless feel free to unmute and leap on in, but otherwise we'll go to the testifier. Okay, good. I see your thumbs up. So excellent. So then we have Ann McCulley from Child Care, where you've been with us before. So much appreciate your work for the state. So Ms. McCulley, please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and members. My name is Ann McCulley. I'm Executive Director of Child Care Aware of Minnesota. And I was asked to be here today to offer some insights on really this bill and the next bill. So I wasn't sure that when I was going to be doing that. So I'll try to break those up a little bit, mostly just to offer perspective. We are the system in the state who both helps parents find childcare, so answering their questions and directing them to licensed options in the state, but also, of course, work directly with our programs and our workforce on growing that workforce and supporting them. I just want to start by saying we are absolutely sympathetic to the challenges that you just heard named. Our staff listen daily to parents who are desperately, in some cases, seeking childcare options. And we certainly hear daily also from the folks in the field. One of our roles is to do the technical assistance on the grants, the stabilization grants. Actually, we've been doing peacetime grants, public health grants, stabilization grants since this whole pandemic started. So we are, you know, extremely aware of the challenges. I think, and these comments really are about both bills, what we want to make sure though is that as decisions are being made, certainly decisions that are going to be permanent or long-term, adjustments are important for short-term, like the waivers that are currently in place, and we certainly say that, but the concerns we have are making long-term changes that will have unintended consequences. And so much of this conversation and the earlier conversation has been about health and safety. But I think one of the things we try to remind folks, and Ms. Gently just mentioned this too, is that it's more than just health and safety. This is about social emotional growth. This is about opportunity for academic growth when we get to school age. So just making sure, I guess I'm here to offer a cautionary comment that making changes in a vacuum, particularly if we're not investing in those programs, what I've been struck by, and this is this kind of bill, not this one particularly, but the idea of changing ratios, for instance, has been up in the other body for several years. It's been up around the country. And in some ways, making our childcare community and our parents fix that by deregulating versus putting the investments in so that more children can be in these settings, I guess would be the commentary. This bill is more about certified centers, as you heard. That is a newer construct in our state, and I will admit I am less familiar with the current ability of the department to offer things like waivers. I know the department's on. Maybe they can, if there are questions, they can offer that insight. But it is also about ratios and group sizes. So I did post a document, or we had Sydney post a document on the webpage that talks about where ratios and group sizes come in, what are the recommendations around the country. And again, it's about making sure that we have not only health and safety, but the ability for the children to have interaction with those teachers. So yeah, I think I'll stop there on this bill. I mean, obviously this is very limited, very focused, permissive to the commissioner, pretty similar to what's happening right now with waivers. So maybe less of a concern with the content specifically, but this idea of not starting the slippery slope of solving this industry's problems by deregulating. And I'll stop there, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. McCulley. As I move to Representative Wazlewick, just a couple things for folks. So expect to be asking DHS. I think we have folks on after Representative Wazlewick's done, or in a little bit, I'll want to have whoever's on provide whatever perspective they may have in this bill. And I also do want to direct members' attention to the document Ms. McCulley mentioned about ratios from child care, where, because one thing that's nice in there is there's a little chart showing what the current law is, and we can compare with proposals to make changes, which is helpful. So we'll go to Representative Wazlewick for a question. Representative Wazlewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if Representative Wolgamott would be able to answer this question, or maybe somebody from the Boys and Girls Club. But I'm just interested to know what sort of conversations were had with the actual staff who work with the children. I think whenever we're talking about changing ratios, that directly impacts the staff who actually would be impacted by that. And so I just want to get some feedback on that, if there were conversations directly with the staff who are caring for the children in regards to this legislation. Thanks.
And whomever, maybe Ms. Bechtold, maybe you were the right person to ask, or?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Yes, we did talk to our staff. It is a bill that our change that we would be very temporary, that we would, it would not be something that we would want to continue on, because a 1 to 15 is way more manageable and what is ideal, but it would just help in these short-term time frames. So yes, we did.
And I see that the bill's author wants to step on in. Representative Wolgamott, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Wazlewick. I just wanted to concur with what Ms. Bechtold said. I too have had conversations with staff, and they understand that this is, you know, not intended to be a long-term thing. It's just meant to create short-term flexibility options. And most of the staff that I've talked to recognize that, you know, it's way better to have kids in the Boys and Girls Club environment than it is. They're way more safe there than they would be at home. So again, under the recognition that we're not trying to make a permanent long-term change, but this is a short-term flexibility option, the staff that I've been in conversation with are in support of this change.
As I bring it back to Representative Wozniak, I'll just note, I guess for myself at least, maybe others as well, this is limited to situations where there's national security or peacetime emergency or public health emergency. So it is very much tied to that kind of situation. Representative Wozniak, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the response. I just, as somebody who is a staff person in a program, it's always nice to have like that conversation actually happening with the staff. I assumed it was happening, but I'd just like to confirm that. Because it is important to have those conversations. So thank you, Representative Wolgamott, and thank you for your response.
Right. Thank you, Representative Wozniak, and Representative Juergens, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to comment. I think that this bill is completely unnecessary. If it were making permanent staffing ratios changes, I would understand it, but the governor was able to change the staffing ratios during an emergency, and this bill gives authority to make staffing changes during an emergency. It worked before. I don't know why we need this bill. I'm just kind of confused by that. And so I don't understand. I think it's unnecessary in my opinion. I just wanted to make that comment, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Representative Juergens. We should probably sort of clarify that, because I think it you're right that it applies during a peacetime emergency declared under state law. And you recall, Representative Juergens, there was a lot of back and forth about saying, hey, Governor, don't do so much on your own. We, the legislature, should be acting. I think that this also applies during public health emergencies declared at the federal level, even if there wasn't a peacetime emergency declared under our state statute. So I think it's broader, but I guess Representative Wolgamott, can jump on if he has thoughts, or we can go to staff too. Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Representative Juergens, maybe you didn't get the chance to hear from the testifiers about why this would be helpful to their efforts, but you're right. You know, let's let the legislature do its job. Let's, you know, take our authority that is given to us as legislators, as lawmakers, and respond to the needs that are happening throughout our child care facilities and with families throughout our state. So I don't know if my testifiers would like to repeat what they already said about why this would be necessary and why this would be helpful. But again, let's do our job as lawmakers. Let's step up and let's use the power that we have to introduce legislation to respond to this problem.
And I'll certainly go back to Representative Juergens. I don't know if the testifier, well, I'll go back to you, Representative Juergens, and if there's something else you want to direct to a testifier, please. But Representative Juergens.
Well, I guess my question then to Representative Wolgamott would be, would you consider, I don't have an amendment obviously ready for today, but would you consider making this permanent rather than subject to emergency declaration?
Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm more than happy to talk to you and work with you on this to get your support, Representative Juergens, but that's just outside of the scope of what we're trying to do here. This is what, you know, having it be in this specific situation is what I've deemed best with my testifiers and the people in my community, as well as my conversations with the department. So before committing to that, I would want to, you know, consult with the people that I'm working with in my community on this bill, and I would want to consult the department before making that. But I'm certainly open to having a further conversation with you on this, as well as the other stakeholders, Representative Juergens.
Representative Juergens, back to you.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Representative Juergens, I can imagine that. I mean, as Ms. McCauley said, we're balancing a number of things out, right? So you could imagine that somebody could support doing something during the public health emergency, but say, boy, this is not something we want to do beyond a public health emergency. I guess I could imagine that would be an approach somebody could take. We'll go to the lead, Representative Francis, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just going to piggyback a little bit off of what Representative Juergens said. And Representative Wolgamott, I found your comments, as much as I appreciate your input on this committee, just a little constructive criticism. I found your comments back to Representative Juergens just to be a little bit more condescending. I'm pretty sure he did hear the testimony. And as the minority, is our job to just add some clarifying comments, since most of the time, they're really not taken
by the majority, but at least we want those comments on the record. And for me, I don't know why we want to just put this in statute to allow just during peacetime or peacetime emergencies or even on a federal emergency. If it's good enough for the emergency times, then we should make it permanent. I also am very leery about even assuming that we're going to have more of these type of emergencies that we have been in past years. So either make it completely permanent, because you know, the health and safety of the children shouldn't be at risk just if there's an emergency, right? So if during this time things have been operating just fine, I would be more inclined to just permanently put it in statute.
Thank you, Representative France. And yeah, please, Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Lead France. And then I just want to apologize to Representative Juergens if what I said came off as condescending. I think sometimes in a virtual environment, maybe it's harder to pick up on things. So certainly, thank you for your comment, Representative Juergens. And as I mentioned, I would be more than happy to work with you and stakeholders on changes to this to earn your support. So just wanted to say thank you, Representative Juergens, for that, and happy to work with you. And I want to apologize if what I said came off as condescending. Not my intent, and happy to work with you and everyone on this committee to earn support for this legislation and make sure that we're giving both the department and our child care facilities the tools and flexibility that they need to care for our children and make sure that they're safe and supported.
Representative Wolgamott, thank you for that. And I really appreciate Lee Franson pointing out that concern, and thank you for acknowledging that yourself, Representative Wolgamott. Representative France, I don't know if you had something further. I see you're still unmuted. Feel free to jump in if you do.
Yes, so Representative Wolgamott, that's one of the reasons why I appreciate you, because you you don't take things personally, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, and to Representative Wolgamott's point, boy, this Zoom environment does not help, I have to say, in terms of us just sort of, in terms of our collegiality and working together. It can be a challenge. So thanks to all. So Representative Katiza Witun I think has her virtual hand raised. So Representative Katiza Witun, I gather you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm on my phone today, so sort of the Zoom functions. But yes, I did want to chime in here a little bit about the fact that this would allow younger staffers at some of these programs. I think it kind of reminds me a little bit about the districts who school districts who are looking into beginning or have already begun what's being referred to as grow your own programs, grow your own teacher type programs, so that they're actually like classes. So students who are considering going into the teaching profession can kind of begin that as they're actually on site at the schools. And so I think that this is definitely a positive in that perspective. So we get a little bit more flexibility to the centers who have staff that are adult age, but then also have a little bit more flexibility for students who. Sorry,
Representative Katiza Witun. I think you might be. So this bill actually, I think, does not relate to the age of staffers. So I think your comments may be directed to the other bill we're going to have up. I could be wrong about that. If you just want to make sure that you're commenting on the correct bill, this is the one. This is Representative Wolgamott's bill. Yeah, to increase the maximum group size.
Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Chair.
No problem.
So okay, I was thinking that I knew that it was expanding from 15 to 20. Students, but I thought the age of 18 was kind of a big part of that, so that there were other staffers who were able to be there under the age of 18. But perhaps
I think that's a different. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. But I think that's a different, possibly different bill. This Representative Rasmussen may have gotten a little heads up about a question you may be asking, but
Thank you for chipping in there.
No problem. Yeah. Anything further on the Wolgamott bill, Representative Katiza Witun, at this point?
Not at this point, thank you.
Okay, yeah, no problem. We'll look for you a little bit later. So Representative Pryor, you've got your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wolgamott, for being available for questions here. So my understanding of what we have right now before us is this idea that that we're kind of looking ahead to if a health emergency happens again, how we can help our care providers in a particular very limited subset of care providers, kind of fill in the gaps. And so I think just to highlight in my understanding of what you're trying to get at is that if you've got a bad situation, which a health emergency is, it's a bad situation for everybody. You want to pick out the best alternatives. And so that maybe in this bad situation where you don't have the staff available because of, they're out ill, you can't hire them because they're staying home with their own small kids. And, situations like that, that cause the staffing shortage, that, it's better to have a few extra kids in a program than to have them sitting home alone or other alternatives that are not as good. So, kind of the discussion has gone why this isn't permanent, but if I understand what you're saying, Representative Wolgamott, in your bill and what you're trying to get at is that we want to be prepared and we want to do our jobs as a legislature to put out some guidelines for how we can adapt in a very bad time, which a health emergency has been and could be in the future, unfortunately. So just though we hope it never happens. God, I'm going to say a prayer after this to make sure that we don't go into those bad times again. So is that a fair characterization, Mr. Representative Wolgamott?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Pryor, 100%. Couldn't have said it better myself.
So we do need to keep moving, but I need to get back to Representative Katizi Watun because staff has corrected me that I think when I popped out and I missed that amendment, then in fact there is a reference to age of 18. And so Representative, my apologies to all. Representative Katizi Watun, if you can make your point pretty briefly if you can, but my apologies for misleading you there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Glad that we got that sorted out. I appreciate you coming back to me. I think that it's a good idea that we have a little bit more flexibility and creativity. I appreciate Representative Wolgamott working with his community to kind of figure out things that could help solve, not solve necessarily, but work to minimize the impact that some of these crises can have on our communities. Certainly he's worked with the stakeholders in St. Cloud, and I know that that will definitely have impact on other communities across the state. So just wanted to express my gratitude for that creativity.
Thank you, Representative Katizi Watun. So with that, final comments, Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members, for hearing this bill. In conclusion, I just really want to thank all of our child care providers throughout the state, and specifically the people in my community with the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota. Throughout this whole pandemic, I have trusted them with the care of my daughter, Polly. They show up every day dealing with all these kids, and our community could not function without them. So this bill is for them. This bill is making sure that more children in our community, like my daughter, Polly, can have that wonderful experience, that safe environment, and get the care that they need and deserve. So thank you again for hearing this. Thank you to our child care providers and all the team at the Boys and Girls Club. And I want to continue working with you and members of this community to make sure that we have the tools and the flexibility that you need to do your jobs and keep our children safe in times of crisis. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. With that, the chair lays over House File 3530 for possible inclusion in a larger bill. And many thanks to the testifiers for being here. And with that, we have House File 2817 with Representative Rasmussen. So glad to have him with us. Representative Franson, I wonder if you would mind moving House File 2817 to bring it before the committee.
So moved.
Thank you. Thank you. And then also, would you move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in Representative Rasmussen's preferred form?
Yes, I will move the DE1 amendment on behalf of Representative Jordan. Welcome to the committee, Representative Jordan.
And indeed,
Representative Rasmussen, sorry.
I share your, no problem. I share your welcome to him. And I think Representative Rasmussen, will simply, I don't know that we need to have too much description of your amendment. This will put the bill in the form that you wish, and that we can have a discussion on that once it passes. I assume Representative Rasmussen, you're okay with moving forward in that way?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, perfect. So members, all in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so the motion passes, the amendment's adopted, and we have the bill in the form you wish. So again, Representative Rasmussen, welcome to you, and please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about the important issue of childcare and the workforce crisis occurring in childcare currently. Senator Ekin and I have been working on this bill at the request of childcare directors in the communities that we represent. During the peacetime emergency, DHS had the a power and offered waivers on staffing requirements and the mixing of different age categories for childcare centers. This flexibility that was provided was key to keeping childcare available to families across the state of Minnesota. Even as COVID has waned, there is still a workforce crisis for childcare providers. And this is making it difficult for families to get access to childcare. House File 2817, as amended, would extend the waivers granted by DHS during the peacetime emergencies until June 30th of 2023, giving more time for childcare providers to work on these workforce issues and to provide more spots, more availability to reduce the waiting list that we've already heard about today. Mr. Chair, you all admit that this is not a silver bullet to fixing all problems that we're facing with childcare, but I do think it's a common sense approach to take some of our learnings that we had during the peacetime emergencies and provide some temporary relief and help childcare providers provide childcare and help families find childcare so that they can go to work and make sure that their kids are in a safe and nurturing environment. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I have one testifier, and then I think we also have some members of the public that have signed up to testify.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Representative Rasmussen. So we'll move to your testifier. Welcome to you, and please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Pinto. I appreciate the opportunity. My name is Susan Tenak-Stafke, and I'm here to testify on behalf of this bill. I'm a longtime educator of early childhood. I have put in 30 years of my life dedicated to teaching higher education, as well as providing care and education for young children and families. I have the opportunity to see things on both sides. I train individuals to become early childhood educators within our Minnesota State College system, but at the same time, I'm also an executive director of two childcare centers in West Central Minnesota. I'm very happy to say that I'm the executive director for Children's Corner in Fergus Falls, Minnesota, and Pura, Minnesota. I represent a group of directors. We are called the West Central Directors Initiative Association. We actually requested Representative Rasmussen and Senator Ekin to please bring this on our behalf. I represent a group of about 15 different directors across West Central Minnesota who, during the peacetime emergency, when we had the relief from the staffing situation that Representative Rasmussen has presented, made a huge difference in our lives and in the ability for us to staff appropriately and with the right number of staff needed to meet those ratios. What we have been asking is that that is able to continue and to extend as we are still working on a childcare workforce crisis. Although the pandemic is coming to an end or at an end, however any of you want to label it, The pandemic of workforce for childcare is not ended yet. We're still right in the middle of it. We are still struggling with it. And we would appreciate the opportunity to have more flexibility in who we are using in our classroom to meet those ratios. Currently, a teacher qualified person needs to be the first staff to meet the ratio within the classroom. However, many of us know that sometimes the best person, the best qualified person who indeed may have that degree or that background, isn't always maybe the best fit for a classroom. I have some aides that are amazing, wonderful staff that would be amazing in the classroom that I could use in the classroom, but I'm not allowed to due to the regulations of meeting that first criteria. And so as directors, as we are trying very hard to help remove the issues that we and the barriers that we have to staffing, this is one of the things that made our life much easier and much more manageable. As an executive director of a child care center for 16 years, I feel that I've got the appropriate background. I've got the appropriate education. I'm a very competent, smart individual, and I feel that I would know who the best person is to be in a classroom. And I would look for and ask for that support to have that opportunity to make those decisions. I'll leave you with one real recent story. There are many stories, and I know you've all heard them. I've been on this committee before, and I know that the stories are out there. But one story I want to share with you is last Tuesday, I had a teacher, qualified staff, walk in my office at the end of the day, hand in her resignation, and her last day would be Friday. I had a three-day notice for a full-time qualified teacher to be leaving a classroom of 10 preschoolers, of which I had no replacement, and nor could I find one within 3 days' time, because in rural Minnesota, it is very difficult to find people who meet the qualifications of being a teacher. So there again, there I was faced. I had a three-day notice. And in fact, some of my good friends and colleagues would tell me, well, you had 3 days, that's a pretty good notice. Many times we don't get a notice. Many times we have people call us at 7 a.m. and tell us they're just not going to come back anymore. And so by having the opportunity and the flexibility for us to be able to move our staff in such a situation where we could use aides, and meeting that ratio would be enormously helpful and welcoming to us. So yes, I was able to figure out how to piecemeal all my people who are teacher qualified. And yes, I'm appropriately staffing, but I have to tell you that it was 3 days of a lot of stress of me trying to figure out how exactly we were going to do that with such short notice. So I appreciate Representative Rasmussen. I appreciate Senator Ken Ekin. And I appreciate the fact that they came and listened to our group of 15 different directors asking for the same opportunity. I thank you today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here, and thanks for your really, really important work. It's so critical and so challenging. So thank you. I know we have Ms. McCulley on this bill as well. Ms. McCulley, you had identified yourself previously, so you can just dive in and share any thoughts on this proposal.
Yes, and thank you. And once again, everyone, my name is Ann McCulley with Child Care Aware of Minnesota. Asked to come and comment on both these bills from our perspective. I will say that my comments were written prior to the DE1 amendment. So again, understanding that that's a more limited scope, but I think it's the same cautionary tale that I told earlier, which is just to keep thinking from the perspective of the bigger picture in this particular case, because it speaks to the idea of less training and fewer qualifications for staff. I just want to remind us that early childhood educators are critical for ensuring that each and every young child has equitable access to high quality learning and care. Their level of knowledge and practice does influence young children's educational outcomes. And so there's a core body of knowledge, skills, values that early childhood educators really do need to demonstrate to promote the development, learning, and well-being of all our young children. And some, I think, concern is that having, again, if this were permanent, an 18-year-old aide is highly unlikely to have attained that level of skill and knowledge without the opportunity to work under a supervising or lead teacher, which is the normal construct. I think the other comment I would make that in this bill, there's also removes the requirement to have a center director with experience and training. It's basically saying you would have someone in charge of daily operations. And I just want to speak up for, first of all, Ms. Tenek, Stapke, sorry, I think nailed it in terms of talking about the importance of having the right people in the right seats. I think the concern is that we have directors out there facing challenges they've probably never seen before in terms of supporting a workforce and families who've been through tremendous stress and trauma in the last couple of years. So not to, again, if this were long-term, I think the importance of a good qualified supported director is key, and we can't forget that either. I guess the only other thing I would say is to remind you that this legislature has passed some legislation just in the last year that does move us in a slightly different direction than this bill would if it were again permanent. The Great Start Task Force that is underway has a focus on ensuring that Minnesota's early childhood educators are qualified, diverse, supported, and equitably compensated regardless of setting. And you also passed into legislation last year the Workforce Development Grant, that is some, as well as the One Stop Network. That is something our system will be rolling out this spring and summer. And that, particularly the Workforce Development Grant, uses language that says helping economically challenged Minnesotans start a career in childcare. So it is with an eye towards career, it is with an eye towards growth, and it is with an eye towards capacity building. So continuing to lower standards is not the solution to our workforce issues. And children shouldn't bear the burden of inadequate support to our overall childcare system. What we really need, as I said earlier, is greater investment in this field to attract and retain the well-prepared workforce and the children that children and families deserve, and that we ensure that way that every young child has access to quality early care and education. And I will stop there and happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. McCauley. I know that we have someone from DHS on, and Amanda, to answer questions. Amanda pulling on them, we can sort of see where things go, but we'll go to Lee France and to kick us off here. So Lee France, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm gonna respectfully disagree with Ms. McCauley. I think she's protecting her own turf, in my opinion, and not exactly listening to the business owners themselves. And so, Ms. Tenyek, Staffy, I want to know that I heard you, and that is exactly what I'm hearing in my district as well. And around the state, we've been hearing the same thing for years. So I just want to know that, I just want you to know that we deal here in the legislature with so many different opinions, and everybody has different agendas. And you're appreciated in the field that you do. And I understand, I don't personally know the stress that you're under, but I used to do childcare as a family home provider. So my stressors were just a wee bit different than you owning a center. I do appreciate the bill that Representative Rasmussen is bringing forward, and something that I think that we need to do is also look at the ratios for licensed family care providers. Who says that 8 to 10 children is the magical safe number? And if you add an additional child without a helper, that is a dangerous level, and we cannot deviate from what is in statute. So I know all this is going to be looked at in the modernization efforts, but it really, really does frustrate me as a member of the legislature that we have business owners, either if it's a center provider or a licensed family provider, telling us as lawmakers that we need more flexibility. This is not working. We have parents saying, I can't find care. What are you doing at the legislature? I am so, every time I hear, what are you doing at the legislature for childcare? I want to scream, because the work that we are trying to do in this committee is being met with, oh, we have an answer for you. It's government preschool. We're going to put these kids into pre-K, and that's going to help as well. That doesn't help. All it does is pit the private sector and the government up against each other. And guess who wins? The government always wins. And every year, we are not making strides toward a stronger private sector. We are making strides for a more powerful government that is taking the kids out of these private sectors. So when Ms. Tenyek Staffke comes to the legislature and she's like, whoa, I need some help. And she's met with, oh gosh, you know, we've got these things. We need a robust workforce, and we need equity pay. And that's not what she's here for. So I'm just a little frustrated today, Mr. Pinto. This committee frustrates me sometimes because my heart is with the actual providers themselves and with the families. It's not with the government bureaucracy. It's not with childcare aware saying, oh, we need this. No, I am here to listen to Ms. Tenyek Staffke and any other business owner from the private sector that comes to us asking for help. That is our job. Our job is not to protect the government. Our job is not to make government more powerful. Our government is with the people. Thank you.
Thank you, Lady Franson. I think rather than engage, I have various thoughts on what you said, but I think what we'll do is figure that this is going to be an ongoing conversation. And Ms. Tanya Stafke, you had said that you, and I know other people too, do follow our committee's conversations. And I guess what I'd encourage is this is going to continue to be a conversation over these coming weeks. It has been over past months. I disagree with some of the things that Lee Francis said, and she'll disagree with some of the things that I say. But certainly we are all doing our very best to support those of you who are supporting young kids and their families. And so I'll maybe leave it at that. So Vice Chair Pryor, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
I'll maybe just say to folks, we'll need to be pretty quick here if we can. I'll just sort of emphasize to each of the folks that we do have another bill we need to get to and have a hard stop at 10 a.m. But please, Representative Pryor.
Right, and What I wanted to bring forward and talk about is, we're always looking at the whole problem in the committee and the data on the whole problem. And first of all, we all agree there is a problem, that there is a crisis, and there was a crisis that was existing before the pandemic, and of course was exacerbated in just astronomically during the pandemic, and now that we're coming out of it. And so really, I think what we're trying to address is the best way to come out of this and to build a stronger system going forward. And when I hear this bill, what I hear it doing is essentially just treating a symptom, which is the availability of staff right now, when the underlying problem is that economics don't work. You know, that you can't pay people enough to keep doing these jobs. And that, but on the other hand, the quality of the people doing the jobs is first and foremost the most important part of the system. And that young people can do the job, but that they need the experience of someone older being around. So I think that in the ideal world, we would not need this bill because we would have, the resources available to compensate people for what they're worth, and especially these people that are just starting in the field. And I think that's the idea that we understand that there's a crisis is what we all agree about. And I guess what we're looking for, though, is solutions to the crisis. And I'm, worried, a little concerned about this bill because I think it just treats a symptom temporarily without really addressing what the underlying problem is. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity for that statement.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. I don't see other hands up right now. I'm sure I'm getting messed up. Representative Rasmussen, I was going to go to you to respond to all that anyway, and we'll certainly give you the closing opportunity for closing comments. So please, Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the conversation today on this important topic. I think it's important for us all to note the real situation, or at least the situation that I see in the community that I represent. Right now, there's waiting lists, and there's no childcare available in a lot of communities, or people have to drive oftentimes, 30 plus miles to find an available spot in Otter Tail County. And for me, it's important for us to really understand that situation. While we're talking about modernization efforts and longer term fixes, I do think it is important for us to look at how we can provide temporary relief to childcare providers. This relief is temporary. It would only last 1 year in the amended version. DHS did this during the peacetime emergencies, and as far as I know, haven't reported any major, any issues or problems that I'm aware of. And the other piece I would say is that this does not compete or replace any other modernization efforts or any even conversations on funding that are going on. This is, I think, taking some of the lessons we learned during the pandemic, and looking at the workforce crisis that really hasn't changed or gotten any better since the pandemic, and extending some of this flexibility to make sure that kids do have a safe and nurturing environment to go to, because right now in the community that I represent, and I thought that the testimony on Representative Wolgamott's bill also dovetailed nicely with this, there are individuals who their entire lives are being disrupted, their ability to go seek employment is being disrupted because of what's going on. And so this is not a silver bullet, but I think it's a common sense solution that will provide some relief over the next year. So thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you, Lead Franson, for the opportunity and for the discussion today.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. And as you're probably aware, there's no group of legislators that spend more time and energy in the last few years focusing on those very issues you've identified than we have. We may have some disagreements about precisely what to do about it, but I know that we're just absolutely focused on supporting those who are supporting our young kids. So thank you very much, Representative Rasmussen, and thanks again to your to Ms. Tenex Stafke. And Ms. McCauley as well. So with that, the chair does lay over House File 2817 for possible inclusion and a larger bill as it did with Representative Wolgemont's bill. And then finally, we have House File 3783. And Representative Pryor, if you could please move that bill be re-referred to the Committee on Workforce and Business Development.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And so Representative Olson, we've heard different versions of this before. I know we only have a few minutes, but that was part of the reason for that. So Representative Olson, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And so I know this committee, as I've been listening this morning, is well-versed in the complexities of childcare and knows very well about the shortage we have across our state. So I will just jump into what this bill does to address it. So the DEED Child Care Economic Development Grant Program has been very successful in helping communities across the state add new child care slots and retain existing slots by providing funding for child care business startup or expansions, training both for licensure and business operations, facility modifications, assistance with licensing and regulatory requirements. And in 2021, the DEED Child Care Economic Development Grant Program received $5 million appropriation. And in December of 2021, DEED awarded $2.5 million in grants, half of the program's biennial appropriation. But DEED received over $9 million in grant requests for the dollars just in the first year. So several high-quality projects did not receive funding, not because they lacked merit, but because the program lacked the funding. And so in 2021, too, as a part of the work we did in the Workforce Committee around child care, the six initiative foundations were appropriated $3 million to support child care expansion and provider support for their services. But in doing this, DEED determined that the appropriation language included in this provision in last year's bill did not give the six MIFs the ability to subgrant their appropriation to community partners, which presented just logistical challenges in conducting their work. So this bill would both fix the ability for MIFs to subgrant their second year appropriation to the community partners who are assisting them in their work and to increase the funding for the DEED child grants. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, Scott McMahon.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Mr. McMahon, welcome back. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Scott McMahon. I'm the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership. I'm also here today speaking on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. As I've shared with members of this committee over the past number of years, this has been an extremely successful program, although up until this past year, a small program in trying to address the childcare shortage in Greater Minnesota and now expanded to the Twin Cities as well. Included in your packet is a handout that we prepared that shows how these grants have been distributed throughout all of Minnesota over the past 5 years now. The challenge we face is that demand for the program has increased, creativity has flourished in our communities, and the funding has not kept pace with that. As Representative Olson acknowledged, DEED received $9.2 million worth of requests off of $5 million available funding for this biennium in just the first year. There are a number of very, very strong proposals that were submitted that weren't funded. As Representative Olson indicated, not because of the merits of the proposal, but simply because of the lack of the funding. One of the things that DEED testified to this committee earlier this session is that what they have seen with this program, and rewinding a little bit, the first year this program was created, there was about $500,000 included. The second biennium, there was $750,000. And last year, you appropriated $5 million to the program. What DEED has seen is that in the first two bienniums, communities were reacting to the funds that were available. And now communities are getting strategic and thinking forward as to what can happen if these funds are available. And so that's part of the reason why we've seen such a significant uptick in demand for these, is that people, communities and partners have realized the power of these dollars and are starting to think, okay, we have the shortage in our community. We're losing providers for X, Y, and Z. how can these dollars help? And they've seen the impact that these dollars have had in communities across the state. And so, you know, we're seeing the program do what it needs to do, and it is having an impact. Unfortunately, the funding level just isn't what it needs to be. And so $5 million will at least get us to the point where the programs or the proposals that are on the table right now can be funded, acknowledging that we'll probably see an uptick in demand for it in the second year of the biennium as well. With regards to the second program or second change in the bill, as Representative Olson indicated, the six initiative foundations in many cases would like to see their ability to subgrant to organizations like First Children's Finance or other partners in communities. And this language just allow them to have that ability.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. We I do want to make sure, in case there are questions, members, please raise your hands if you do. We have our hard stop at 10 a.m. House Public Information has asked for that. So I do want to honor that. I'm just in case there are, I'm looking to see if there are hands raised, and perhaps Representative Wazlowick, I'll have to have you be really quick if you do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question. I just want to thank Representative Olson for bringing this bill forward. It's really important that we continue to make investments in childcare, and this is a way that we can do that. We know that as Representative Olson and Mr. McMahon said, like there's this demand, right? And we're not meeting that demand, and we can meet that demand. So I'm grateful for Representative Olson for bringing this bill forward to make that work. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Representative Olson definitely is an honorary member of Team Early Childhood. Appreciate it. So I am not seeing other hands. So Representative Olson, and members, to remind you, this is going to be a vote. Representative Olson, you get the last word before the vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, for I do appreciate any time I can be in your committee, Chair Pinto, and the good work we can do across committees between workforce and here and other places. So thank you for hearing the bill, and thank you for the support.
Thank you, Representative Olson. And again, I know this has been extremely quick, but members, I suspect that if you think back, you'll find many, many, many times that we've been having conversations about these issues. And so I did not want to belabor it this morning. Mr. Doslin, please, pardon me. So Representative Pryor renews her motion, the House File 3783, be referred to the Committee on Workforce and Business Development. Mr. Doslin, please take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Aye.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Aye.
Lead Franzen.
Aye.
Representative Bennett is excused. Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Representative Daniels is excused. Representative Dabney. Representative Dabney. Representative Damath.
Aye.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, aye.
Representative Cotiza Watu.
Aye.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Wazlowick.
Wazlowick, aye.
And Representative Waldemott.
Waldemott votes aye.
The vote results in 10 ayes and 3 excused.
You're muted, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wazlowick. By a vote of 10 ayes and 3 excused, the motion passes, and 3783 is on its way to the Committee on Workforce and Business Development. Thank you so much, members. A reminder that on Thursday, we will be hearing the presentations by the administration on their budget proposals. And so please come with your questions. I'll just say I expect that I will be proposing anyway that the committee that those proposals inform quite strongly what our committee ends up moving forward. I think there's a lot of good stuff in there. And so I want to encourage all of us to ask a lot of questions, make sure that we understand that really well. Looking to see if there's anything further for members. We've met our 10 a.m. Deadline, which is good. So House Public Media will be very happy with that. And then I did want to highlight that it is very likely that we will have a hearing on April 1st. That will not be a April Fool's joke. Plan on that. That's a Friday at 10:30 in the morning. And so just please, if you can make note of that now for your planning. We'll have more details with that as it moves forward, but I'm expecting that that'll be the case. So thanks so much, members. With that, our meeting is adjourned.